Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're going to talk about, Saul wanted to call it Rules as Written. I called it Rules versus the Story. The idea is that do you have to play by the rules? And I'm not doing air quotes, but you can kind of hear it. or sometimes do the rules get in the way?
What do you mean by get in the way? Get in the way of what?
Of the story.
Oh, of the story.
Yeah. As in, and I'll give you an example.
Give me an example. Yes, here we go.
So we're playing Shadowrun, and yeah. our friend Kathy is a technomage. Technomancer, techno something.
Technomancer.
Yes.
Which is basically
a technomage.
Is a hacker that doesn't need any cyber deck to bust into the internet or Matrix.
Well, since Kathy and I are both new to Shadowrun.
Everybody's new to Shadowrun, I think.
Except for Jason.
Right.
And so we're learning how to play our characters. And so we've watched all these videos on YouTube and different kinds of things. And I'm playing a magic user. So it's a system where if you want to use magic or you want to do technomancing, you're going to get hit hard with, they call it drain or
fade
for the technomancer. Right. I get drain, which means that I can cast as high a spell as I want, but I'm going to get slammed on the back end of it.
A chance.
Most likely, I always lose whatever points I have.
So there's a cost to your... The more power you use, the higher chance of you getting drained.
Yes.
You could actually knock yourself out.
Yes.
Right.
You could kill yourself, probably, if you were really unlucky in your rolls. Because the higher your spell, the higher the force that you use,
right,
the more dice get to roll back at you to cause you pain or
right.
drain or whatever you want to call it.
So
the thing is that my whole point for that story is that her son, Ian, is very much into reading the rules, just like my son. And he really enjoys knowing what the author wants you to do. So his interpretation of the rules is a straightforward interpretation, as in, this is what it says. He figures out in his head, this is the way it's supposed to work, and he doesn't want to give you any give on any of that. He wants the rule to play out that way.
Yeah, and
it's not a malicious thing. It's
no.
it's just the way, and a lot of guys, and maybe women too, have that, well, especially if they're like a programmer or something, they have that kind of, you know, you read it, or it's like you're writing code, right? You write the code, and it works a certain way. And that's the way that it's supposed to work. And somebody else comes along and says, oh, but you could do it this way. It's the same gist, but it's not exactly the way that it's written.
I think another thing about Ian is that he wants to make sure he's playing correct. And it's not like, it's not for a reason that normally people want to play by the rules. It's because certain times in the past, they've gotten screwed over by the GM. By having an adversarial GM. So the rules were there to protect you or your character from death.
That's one reason people
right.
like to play
but
by
that's
the
not
rules.
His problem.
No, no.
Or
and
not,
it's not even a
not
problem.
Not a problem. That's not his reasoning or why he's adamant about playing correctly. He just wants to play by the rules because that's the way it's supposed to be played. He wants to play right, correctly.
And he's young. He's 19 now. He
right.
just turned 19. So sometimes it's hard when you have that kind of personality
yes.
and that kind of idea that, you know, the rules were written for a reason. And I will go into what Gary Gygax and other people who write stuff have said about this. But the idea is that there's rules for a reason, right? And I know Ian has this in his head that
right.
if the rules are there, that's the way they want you to do it. So that's one of them. And then Saul talked about the other person who wants to always play by the rules is somebody who had an adversarial GM
right.
and got slammed, got killed, got whatever.
Or just wasn't happy with the situation, right?
Yeah. And so we've talked about it before. There's different things you can do when you're playing to
mitigate that.
To make sure the GM knows that you feel uncomfortable with that, or you think that they're being mean to you or unfair. And mean might not be the right word, because
singled out, right? You don't want to be picked on. And in this situation, we've talked about different people we play with who they felt them and their characters were not given the benefit of the doubt, or they basically weren't given the same freedoms as other characters. Our friend felt that he was not being fairly
treated,
and he thought other characters and therefore the players were getting away with a lot more than he would, and you know, that's, and that can be frustrating, right? And that's why the rules can be there for people who are like that, right? And said they can go back to the rules and say, well, no, that's not what the rule says. You know, you're letting this character do this, but my character is the one who can actually do it because of whatever skills or attributes or whatever. So, but that's not Ian's situations. He just wants everybody to play right. He wants to make sure that you're not doing it wrong, even.
And what he needs to learn, and he will learn as he goes, and Saul has talked to him about it, and I know his dad has talked to him about it, and his mom hasn't talked to him about it because she gets frustrated. So he helped her with her character, and so she'll do something, and he'll go, that's not the way you're supposed to do it, and in the middle of the game, which Saul doesn't like, and Kathy has a hard time with, because she has an idea of how she wants to play the character, and she's read about it, and she's also watched videos on how people play it, the old style, the new style, and all kinds of different things.
Yeah, the thing about Shadowrun is a very complicated set of rules, and some people say it's a very broken set of rules in a certain sense, because it's so complicated that it slows down the storytelling aspects of the game. And that's what I love about the setting, about the game, is the setting. I love the world that Shadowrun is in. Now, the rules, you know, maybe I should have gotten Shadowrun Anarchy, which is the rules light version of it. But the boys, my son and his friends and their dad, and our friend Jason, they really love the crunchiness of it. They, they really like getting into the rules. And if they pick this and take that and get this gun with this skill, they can roll, 26 dice and stuff like that for whatever.
Which is really cool.
This is neat.
And it's an aspect to the game that not only makes it exciting for them, but it also helps the story go along in a lot of places, because when you're fighting these guys, these bad guys, right? And in Shadowrun, bad is a spectrum. and Saul has us kidnap people and stuff to save the world. It's interesting, but it gives it a flavor. That's a Shadowrun flavor, right?
Yeah.
That's part of the game. There's all kinds of games that don't have that fate system, and even D&D isn't as crunchy. Pathfinder has a lot of those rules, same kind of. Pathfinder's very crunchy in that sense, like what you can and can't do, and there's the 5-foot step and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, Pathfinder's become, they call it Mathfinder, right? Because there's so much math involved. Because what they did in D&D, they did away with all these pluses and minuses for you to hit, right?
Yeah,
and all you get is advantage or disadvantage. Which means you roll 2d20s, and if you have advantage, you take the highest, and if you have disadvantage, you take the lowest. So they did away with all these feats that give you, if I charge, I get +5 to hit, and if I charge and have a long spear, I get a +15, and I use this feat that gives me jumping ability, and then so you get all these pluses from this massive amounts of pluses and minuses, that it becomes this numbers game, right? And so... And when I ran Pathfinder, I don't remember that being such a big deal, but a lot of that was loaded by the players, right? They are the ones that dealt with all those numbers, and I took it on faith that they were doing it right.
And they were,
according to them. Anyway. I'll never know.
You don't know. That is an idea about the rules. There's different kinds of ways that the rules can help you in a game, but then the way they get in the way sometimes is that when you have to stop and somebody is telling you that, no, that's not the way it works, this is the way it works, that kind of slows down the storytelling aspect of the game.
Right. And then we have to look things up and stuff like that. And so a lot of people who play role-playing games, especially when we are playing a role-playing game and we are trying to tell a story. I mean, even as crunchy, and no matter how crunchy the system is, we are role-playing. And so a lot of times... For example, Shadowrun, Kathy wanted to do a certain thing, and I just said, okay, and I gave her something to roll, right? And Ian's like, that's not the way you're supposed to do it. And he doesn't address it to me, he addresses it to his mom. And then his mom gets kind of upset because he goes, that's what Saul told me to roll, so that's what I'm going to do. And so, and my perspective is, I just want there to be the chance of failure. If she's trying to do something difficult, and in Shadowrun there's like opposing dice and all this other stuff. If she succeeds, then she gets what she's trying to do, and the story moves forward. And if she doesn't succeed, or if she rolls badly, then we get to tell that part of the story, right? And that side of the story, and go into that direction of where that story can go. And getting that, whether it's you know, 11 dice or 12 six-sided dice, or if she should use her logic instead of her sleaze and all this other stuff. And all the numbers are almost the same. So, you know, that to me doesn't matter. But to Ian and people like him, they want to play by the rules because that's the way it's that's the way it's written. And, you know, and like I said, that sometimes that gets in the way of the story. And
it comes down to when you're running a game, you have to learn how to work with the people that you're playing with. So Saul usually, and in Pathfinder, he did this with the boys because they were really into the rules at the time. He said, I'm the GM. It's my world. If I change something, it's because I want to change it. And maybe that rule isn't going to apply here. He did that a lot with the bestiary because they would read the bestiary and know what all the monsters were.
Well, I had to do that. I mean, it was because they knew everything about the monsters because they had literally gone through the bestiary or the monster manual. You know, that's bestiary is what they called it in Pathfinder, and read every single monster. And I'm like, they couldn't unlearn what they learned and they couldn't unsee what they saw. So I told them, I go, look, when you encounter something, I may call it a half-orc or I may call it a bugbear, but it may not be the same kind of bugbear inside your bestiary or the one you read. I reserve the right to change stuff. That's just the way it is.
Which brings us to rule zero.
Rule zero. So, you know, I don't remember ever hearing. I remember hearing about rule zero. I don't remember it really being that big of a deal. I mean, I've been playing since, I don't know, 1978, so I've been around a little bit, around D&D even, but Rule Zero, I don't know if I read it or if somebody told it to me, you know, but I don't remember being referred to here as Rule Zero, but Jolene decided to go look it up. I don't know, where did you hear that? From a podcast?
I was doing research on why people want to play by the rules, and it was all over the place.
Oh, well, so yeah, there you go.
When I read this, I was quite astonished at the hardness in the arguments. It's either, yes, the GM can amend the world and amend rules to his liking and to his world to make things fun and make it work. And there were other people who took a hardline approach and said, if a rule's written, you need to play by it. Because if you're not playing by the rules, then you're not playing the game the way that it was supposed to be played. So then they go, they're talking about Rule Zero. And so I'm all, what's Rule Zero? So I look it up. And Gary Gygax wrote, I think the first time he did it was in 1980. The book says on the first page, anything in this booklet and in other D&D booklets should be thought of as changeable. Anything that is that the DM thinks should be changed. The purpose of these rules is to provide guidelines that enable you to play and have fun. So don't feel absolutely bound to them. And it goes on, it's in AD&D. It's in third edition, 3.5, 4. D&D 4.4.
Oh, 4.0.
4 point, just 4.
Oh, yeah, 4th
edition. And 5th edition. And then it's also in Warhammer, which Gary Gygax didn't write that one. And then it's in Vampire the Masquerade. And Munchkin says you should argue over all the rules because it just makes it more fun. Warhammer Fantasy, it doesn't actually have Rule Zero printed, it says, but it's the same as the 40K.
So now that you tickled my memory, I remember reading the AD&D book. I don't know which one it is. I think it was the Player's Manual. It might have been the DM's Guide.
It's the Player's Handbook.
The Player's Handbook. Inside, and that's exactly
on page 8 it says it.
And that's what he says. He goes, consider these not rules, but guidelines. So take what you want and discard the rest. And so a lot of people, the problem with that is, depending on your GM of the time, and you got to remember, this was a small group of people that were playing games, at least in my part of the world, you know, Central California, whatever you want to call it, the lettuce capital of the world, Salinas. There was only me and my friends that I thought played. Now, a little bit later on, I knew other people played. And what's amazing is this guy called Bob that I learned, or I got to know going to conventions, and he's from Salinas, and he's been playing D&D since he was a kid too, and he's a little bit younger than me, but you know, he was around. So obviously we were isolated. There was no internet, right? We couldn't get together in any chat rooms or anything like that, or there was no Facebook, so there was literally no way to contact each other. I remember, though, this is a long time ago, years ago when D&D first came out, I joined the RPGA, which was the Role Playing Gamers Association that TSR put out. And one of the things in reasons you wanted to join, because in the back of the book, everybody who was a member, they could opt in to be placed on a list of where who, your name and where you were from, and that you played game. And I was on that list for a little while, but nobody ever contacted me, because how are you going to contact somebody if you just know their name? Not like today. But they told you what town you lived in. And so you like, and I remember Mark Schmidt, my friend, he was listed because he was an early adopter of RPGA. It was a subscription service. I think I only paid for 1 year, and I got a couple of the like the first, I wish I had those first editions of, not first edition, the only editions of those, because they came out with like a zine, a booklet, and it had adventures in it for, at the time, D&D, Gamma World, and something else that TSR came out, Star Frontiers or something like that. But you know, I couldn't afford to keep it up. I was only like 12 or 13 at the time. Or I might have been a little bit older. I think I had a sort of a job. Anyway, so what were we talking about that? What were we talking about? We were isolated, right? And so if you were in a group, you were stuck with the person who was GMing. There was no, if you didn't want to play with that guy, some people didn't have a lot of options. And that still exists today. A lot of people, you know, I read on, even on Facebook and stuff, they go, well, I live in a small town. I don't know anybody else that plays. I'm kind of stuck with this GM. And this GM's a jerk. And you're like, wow, that sucks to be stuck like that. And that's, I think a lot of people felt that way back when. The problem is a lot of people who play, and I mean, the problem is a lot of people who are in that circumstance, they don't want to be a GM. So, you know, they can't say, well, you know, I'll GM and maybe show you how, you know, how you should do it, or why I don't, you know.
One, they probably shouldn't say that to the only GM they know.
That's true.
I'm just saying that.
At least, you know, like maybe share the GM duties. But anyway, so I think that was a big problem back then. And so people, you know, I've said this already, that people use the rules to protect themselves and the characters from unfair education.
Education. I don't think that's a word.
From unfair
practices.
No, yeah, that too. But decisions by the GM.
There right? you go.
Because you could always say, well, the rules say this. But I think we've gone away from that. I think there's, well, I don't know. I was going to say, we don't have as many adversarial GMs as we used to, but I think they still exist, and they still cause a lot of consternation for people out there. But I think it's getting better, because there's a lot more, people have more options.
So if you, as a GM,
right,
and you want to go rules versus story, when you want to get the story moving along, or have people participate in the role playing aspect and step away from the rules, I think that was thunder.
I think so. Our lights just flickered.
Sorry, you'll have to edit that out. I forgot. I lost my train of thought with the thunder.
So storytelling over rules. No, I was trying to refresh your memory. So you're right. Storytelling over rules. I think story supersedes rules, you know, every time, unless it's like a flagrant rule violation. It all depends on the situation. If somebody, like I remember Ian, for example, he made a character that was a, he wanted to be able to make potions and magical items, and this was Pathfinder. So he took a bunch of feats that allowed him to do that. And then when I said, oh yeah, I don't allow player characters to make magical items, he got really upset. And even Steve stepped in and said, well, you know, he based his whole character on it. I go, I didn't know, I'm sorry. You know, he could retool his character, but I don't want characters making magical items. I just don't want it in the game. I saw a problem with that, and the problem is that he'd be making all kinds of magical items, and there's already a lot of magic items in my world anyway. It's not like they were hurting for magic items. So I didn't want that to, I mean, I didn't want, oh, yeah, you want plus one sword? Here you go. Here's a plus two dagger? Here you go. So he was upset about it, and I understood that. I go, look, I'm not going to make you keep that character the way it's built. You could go back and retool it and change the feats and stuff like that and make a different character. You know, and keep, you know, keep the level that you were, because this was about third or fourth level or fifth level. So I forget what, at a certain level you could start making magical items. And so I let him retool his character, but simply because I didn't want that element in that story element in my game. And it wasn't because I, you know, was being a jerk. Well, I may have been, but it's just I didn't want that in my game.
You don't really give out that many magical items. Oh, you give them out sparingly.
So, you guys are loaded with magic items, dude. Come on. Come on.
I'm not saying that they're not. I'm just saying that to the boys, you don't give them out as much as they would like.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I
which is one of the things you don't want that in your worlds, and you're the GM, yeah. right? You want them to be more special, more.
Right. And I'm running in Forgotten Realms, which is a hugely magic-filled world. And I'd probably, if I were to make my own world or my own setting, I would definitely tone down the magic even more. So maybe I wouldn't have any players in my game. But that's more gritty, right? Gritty. I want gritty games. I was so gritty because I think it tells a better story. And the stories are not about, what magic items I have. It's about what your character does. That's more important to me. But that's because I'm an old dude. I'm an old gamer. I want stories. I want, I don't necessarily want to do math no more.
So what are some of the ideas in a game if you have somebody who really wants to play by the rules and you want to change, you don't want them to stop the game all the time? What are some things you can work with to help people to be comfortable with not playing exactly by the rules, and it's not all the rules, it's only certain rules?
Well, I think a lot of this has to be just, as they say in the world, front loaded, right, before your campaign starts. When you gather your group of people and you say, you be upfront about it. This is what my vision of what I want to run. This is the campaign I want to run. This is the type of game I want to run. And so if you tell if you're forthright and smart about it, you tell your players beforehand. Now, I've never done this because I always thought it was understood that, everybody, I don't know what it is. It's just sometimes I don't think very well, or I don't know what it is.
You don't think it through. You're not four moves ahead.
Well, the thing is that I think the way I think is the way everybody else thinks, but obviously that's not true. So, and I think the way I want to have fun is the way everybody else wants to have fun. And again, that's not true. So that's why it's very important for you to be forthright with your players and say, this is what I want out of the game. And I've never done that with any of my players, mainly because they just want to play games and I'm willing to run a game for them. You guys have been playing games with me. What kind of games I run. You know how I run a game.
You know that Saul does not like evil characters.
But still, I think somebody tried to play an evil character.
Yes.
Right? It might have been Ian. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I think it has to do with teenage mind, boy mind. I don't know. I never had that problem, but maybe. Anyway, but I had a Boy Scout for the GM, so.
Literally. An Eagle Scout.
An Eagle Scout. My brother, Felipe, he was a very, I've already talked about him, he's very moralistic. And he was very, very moralistic. And so with that, there was no, why would you guys?
And he means that in a good way when he says it.
Oh, yeah.
You can't tell by the way some people might think moralistic isn't a good term.
No. Well, he was very, he was a great GM. And he, like I say, he was moralistic in the sense that he had a very specific set of morals. And it never occurred to him, and therefore to me, to run an evil character. I've never played a nothing, back then when you had all these alignments that really mattered, right? I never played a neutral evil, which is like the sort of character that is sort of evil, right? Like the, what is it? The thief back when it was AD&D. It was actually a thief, not a rogue. So that changed the dynamic, Calling it by a different name actually does change the way people view it. So a thief, obviously a thief is somebody who steals. Somebody who's not right or doesn't follow the law. So a lot of characters that were thieves were, but you didn't want to be chaotic evil or lawful evil. So you're neutral evil, right? That was like, you're neutral, but just had some evil tendencies. So you're not really bad or terrible. Just, whatever. So, but I never did I play a neutral evil character. I was always chaotic good, lawful good, neutral good, but I was always chaotic good. I don't know why. It's just maybe because I was playing my own. That's what I based my own personality on. And so it never occurred to me playing an evil character. But there's games out there, a lot of people supposedly who played from when they were kids, they go through like, they have played in a game where they're all evil characters. I'm like, wow. I would hate to play in that party, right? Because you'll get stabbed in the back by some wacko, right? Because I'll kill you. I don't care. I'll take your money. A ticker sword. So,
having come from that experience.
I never wanted to play an evil character. It never occurred to me that. So it other was, people it was, might. Yeah. So Ian, I think it was like second level. He goes, oh yeah, I'm evil. I'm like, what? And I don't. And I trust my players, and I don't check their character sheets. Which you probably should as a GM. That's one thing I should do. Like, check character sheets, and two, tell them what my rules, the table rules are for the campaign. And like I said, if you're upfront about it and say, you know, this is what I want out of my game. And sometimes the rules, I know, and people, a lot of people say this as a GM, they hate breaking into the rule book to figure
because
something out.
Because it impedes the story as you're right. going.
Or, you know, what else to say? It breaks that fourth wall or whatever.
I don't know what the fourth wall is.
Was it?
Metagaming?
Yeah. Well, you know, because let's say you're role-playing. You're in it, right? You know, everybody's playing their character. And then a rule comes up. And then everybody stops and has to look up the rule book. It busts you out of that role-playing bubble. You know, that role-playing
aspects. Groove. Yeah.
So I think a lot of new games are storytelling over rules, and the rules are very, very light. You know, I can't think of it. Fate, just some people think it's a light system, rules light system, but the more I look at Fate, the more it is kind of a crunchy system, a little bit. I mean, in a certain sense, the gaming aspects of it, and a lot of people don't like it because it's metagaming, like the Fate chips and stuff like that. That takes it out of role playing and puts them on the game table. But I don't know if I agree with that or not. But there's
I like the Fate chips because it gives you a chance to, because in like when we played Dresden Files with you,
yes,
if you think of something that you want to do. That is probably a little more than your character could actually do, but you role play it really well. The GM will give you a fate chip.
Correct.
To be able to use. Because you came up with an idea that enhanced the story.
Yes.
And it may have broken a rule. Oh,
no. I mean, I like the idea of Benny's fate chips. Even D&D has them, although I don't use them. Did you know that?
No.
I forget what they call them in D&D, 5th edition. They call him a.
He never uses points. Anything that gives us extra stuff. Like he says we're too powerful.
Like you need it anyway. So that's a good idea, is to have that conversation with your players. And I've never done that. I should do that because obviously
you're always talking about session zero.
Well, we never had a session zero. So, but I think it's a good idea. I mean, it because what it happens is that as a GM, you know, you have expectations of what you want to do. What the game you want it to be
and
about.
And as a player, you have expectations about what's going to happen.
Right. Or what kind of game it is going to be, right?
And so, yeah. So then people's personalities will make it in the way of the flow of the game if they need to look at the rules and right. stuff like that.
But you
should also have a time, like, have a question and answer session or something like that. Like, if you can always say, I'm going to let this happen now, we can discuss it after the game. Or you and I can talk about this. But this is what's going to happen now.
And if you read a lot of articles and listen to other podcasts, that's what they say. They say, you know, make the decision as a GM. And then they say if it's wrong later on afterwards, we'll discuss it. But right now during the game, in the middle of the action or in the middle of the scene, you don't want to stop the scene and start looking at rules because that totally messes up the scene. Trust your GM. That they're making a good decision, and then talk about it afterwards.
I know that we've talked a lot about the way that we play in Saul's games and stuff like that, but I don't know what people see or envision. It's not like we are playing, there's three sentences said, and someone has to look up something or anything like that.
No.
You're going along, you're role-playing, and when Saul says everybody needs to roll initiative, then everybody at the table, they like leave the role-playing mindset for a moment. They roll their initiative, and then they figure out what they're going to do. And there's an open discussion around the table about the plan, right? Everybody gets into it, and it becomes less of a role-playing game and more of a miniature where your figure
tactical
is.
Tactical game.
A tactical kind of thing. So really, it's the best of both worlds, role-playing aspect and combat aspect for the kids.
Right.
Because they really like that, and they enjoy it. And I think it's one of the things that you shouldn't let the rules go completely if you want people to enjoy themselves and that's what they enjoy. You should allow for both aspects of people to be able to play by the rules the way they see them, but also be able to say, let's talk about that later. Let's go over that after this game. Let's do it this way now. And then let the things flow that way, right?
Correct. And a lot of times I've even had this discussion during the game. People say, well, that's not the way it's supposed to be done. I go, well, I have told people this. And I've told the game players this. I go, look, when I run a game, if it doesn't make sense to me and the rules contradicts what I think makes sense, I'll go with what makes sense over the rules every time. Every time. Because if something doesn't make sense, you know, in the real world, then I'm not going to. I don't see a reason why a rule should contradict to that. A lot of those times, it's something that has to do with the story. So it's not usually combat-orientated.
Right.
It has to do with the story, and the rules don't usually have a lot to do with story, but every once in a while it does. Or even in a combat, if a combat's like, that's why, you know, in Pathfinder, all these rules about 5-foot steps, does it cause attack of opportunity or no attack of opportunity, all these things, to me, like I said, well, if it makes sense to me, if somebody's passing by, yeah, you could swing at them. Yeah, right, no problem. But other things, like, just didn't make sense to me. I'm like, and it was all about game balancing, right? It was about this balancing of this miniature game aspect of the rules. And so it broke that reality. Well, because it would make this character too powerful if you ignore this rule, that's why that rule exists. And that didn't make, and if it didn't, like I said, if it didn't make sense to me in the real world, I would toss it out, no problem.
So I think the best takeaway for everybody when you're playing in a game, rules versus story, is that it should make sense. It should flow smoothly. And if it doesn't, you should have a conversation with your players, your GM, and figure out a way to make it work for everybody. Because the most important thing, like Gary Gygax said, is that if you should adjust the rules so that you can have fun.
Right.
It's all about having fun. It's not about who's right, who's wrong, which rule you need to follow or not follow.
Yeah.
It's about making it a fun experience for everybody.
Well, Jason, right? Jason, you know, our friend who's playing in our games, he's a total crunch maniac, right? He loves the crunch of the game. But
he fits right in with the rest of them.
Yeah. But he's totally like, whatever the GM decides, it's his game. He can do whatever he wants. And he said that more than like 5 times since I've been playing with him. So he obviously knows that I'm making a decision that may or may not be quite rules as written, raw, as they shorten it. If you see RAW in big words, that means rules as written.
He means big letters.
What did I say?
Big words.
Big words. I remember English is my second language.
Not true.
So, yeah, capital letters. RAW. It means rules as written. And a lot of people, that's like a shield they use against their GM or other players. Jason, who's a total crunch maniac, he told every time, he goes, well, it's your game. You can do whatever you want. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And I think that's pretty cool. And I think that's pretty neat for somebody who has played a lot and loves really crunchy systems to be able to say, you know, I understand that that's not, you know, you're making decisions not to harm me or not to screw me, but to advance the story or tell a better story or whatever.
And that's the best attitude to have, right?
Yes, I totally
so
agree.
As a GM,
thanks, Jason.
Enjoy those players. And as a player who looks at the rules, myself, I don't really, I look at the rules as they're
like
there.
Guidelines.
Yes. And if they say I can't do it, I go, okay. I'll try it this way. But that's me. I'm not so much into, I don't have to follow the rules exactly, but that might be just me. I don't know. I know my son is like, you can't do that, Mom. And I'm like going, why? It's all about having fun. And when you're running a game, that's what you want, is your players to have fun.
Right.
And when you're playing in a game, that's what you want. So if there are situations that cause you uncomfortableness or you can't quite understand, always talk to the GM about it.
Right.
And if they're not approachable to talk to, then
send them an email.
Yeah. Send them a voicemail. Call them when they're not going to be there. Text them.
There you go.
That kind of thing.
Right.
So hopefully this helps you to deal with and enjoy games more by looking at understanding not only your GM, but the players who really want to go by the rules.
Right.
There's different reasons for it.
Right. And I think, like I said, not everything has to. Now players aren't. At all
they're not scared of the GM like they used to be.
Or worried that if I don't play with this GM, I'll never play any role-playing game again.
Well, there might be people like that.
Yeah. I mean, for us in the general vicinity of geekdom that we live in. Because now you can play online. I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't like playing online or whatever. But you know,
it's an option.
There's a huge number of online games. Of course, always be careful. You know, vet the GM or the other players. You know, they usually good GMs will like give you like a application process, sort of. Just say, oh, describe what games you like, what games you like to play, and that'll give you an idea of what kind of players you're gonna get, or what kind of GM you're gonna get. But I think the more options, that's a good thing. So I guess the key to this is communication. Communicate with the GM. Communicate with the players. Both for the expectations and what you want out of the game. So this has been Gaming's Perspectives with Saul.
And Jolene.
And you have a good day.